Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. Before I start this commentary, I want to mention that there may be two unfamiliar sounds in the background. One is the sound of my furnace. You don't usually hear it because normally I heat using my wood stove. But I'm taking advantage of a very warm interlude to replace the gaskets on my wood stove. And while the cement is drying, I've switched to the furnace temporarily. The other thing you might hear is the cat doing all kinds of things, from trying to roll himself up in the various scatter rugs around the house to using those same scatter rugs as slides or jumping up on the furniture and trying to scare me as I record this podcast. But on with the show. What do trains, physical and behavioral health, have in common? Well, it used to be that every kid was taught from the time they were very young to stop, look, and listen at every railroad crossing. Then over time, this responsibility was removed. Soon, bells and lights were added, and then eventually, even the smallest railroad crossings got automatic gates that came down. So people became conditioned to having the system take the responsibility away from them. They didn't have to look anymore because there were signs and there were flashing lights. They didn't have to listen because there were loud clanging bells. And if for some reason they missed both of those, there were gates that came down that they would have to run through in order to cross the track. And as if all of that weren't enough for even the dullest or distracted person, there could be quite a time lag between when all this occurred and the train actually appeared. In fact, for some impatient people, that time lag was so long, they felt that they could even sneak around this entire system and beat the train. There were several problems with this. One was that all of this equipment cost money, and someone was going to have to pay for it. And then we had the next step, which was that if a person chose to put total faith in this equipment, or even if the person chose to ignore all the warnings and cross the track anyhow, if they got hit, they could find themselves a clever lawyer who would somehow figure out some way to remove the responsibility from the person who did this. The same thing has happened relative to human and veterinary behavioral and physical health. Over the years, we've shifted more and more responsibility away from ourselves to others. We didn't foist this on others, though. While we were seeking some way to get rid of this responsibility, there were others who were more than willing to accept it. But then they did such a good job of not only convincing us, but convincing society as a whole, that like crossing those railroad tracks, we came to think that it was a right, that we should either be able to afford this ourselves, or that if we couldn't, someone would pay for it for us. So it wasn't a villain-victim scenario so much as a system that worked for both sides. On one hand, we had a group of individuals who didn't want to accept responsibility for their own health and safety. And then on the other hand, we had another group of people who were willing to accept that responsibility for them, for a price. I'm not going to become embroiled in the who should pay for it and whether it's a right or not dilemma. I'd like to focus on the who's responsible for it. And particularly what I'd like you to be thinking about this week is your animal's health and your animal's behavior. How do you see yourself? Where do you position yourself in this process? Do you see your job as just picking up the tab? Or do you see your job as picking up the tab and doing whatever somebody else tells you to do? Or do you see yourself as more important than that? Do you see yourself as more of an integral part of what goes on in your animal's life? A more integral part in your animal's behavior and your animal's health? If you see your dog, or you see your cat as your best friend, or as a member of your family the rest of the time, why would you distance yourself when the animal really needs you? Just because you've been conditioned to think that somebody else will take care of all of that for you, that someone will sound the alarm, the flashing lights, the clanging bells, put down the barriers. Just because they say they'll do that doesn't mean that we as individual animal owners shouldn't stop, look, and listen.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.